Technorama episode 337 for March 14, 2012. Pi Day.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Someone said there was pie on this show. Where is it?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for March 14, 2012. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for giving us your time. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate it. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Dude, I couldn't be better. Spring is almost here. Except for I could have gone fall back at least an hour instead of forward.
Right, they need to stop messing with the time change thing. There's no point to it anymore. If someone can give me a logical and sound reason.
You know, a minute is worth a minute no matter what time of the year it is. Yeah. That was my profound statement for the show.
And that's it. We're going to move on.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Coming up in this episode, think it's cool to be on Star Wars film? Think again. The stupid things people do on Facebook. And a lot of interesting stuff from yesteryear. All that and more coming up right after this.
Hi, this is Vernon Wilmer, Star Trek The Experience's Borg Drone 7 of 16. Why are you listening to Technorama? Because resistance is futile.
Before we get too far into the show, I want to give a shout out to the chat room. We've got people going on Google Plus every week. We have a live video going on a Google Plus Hangout, so join us there if you can. This week we've got Mad Marv, we've got Dan Coyer, we've got Jason Walker, we've got Nathaniel Albrecht, and of course Tim Elliott is hanging out with us too, and Craig and me.
We renamed him to Old Faithful.
I'm sure he appreciates the old gesture.
Yeah.
Sorry for anybody is old.
I was putting emphasis on faithful. Okay.
Sure you were, buddy. We appreciate everybody showing up, having a good time in the chat room, and adding their personal color commentary to the show as it goes. We'll try to add some of that as we go. Happy birthday. Looking at the Technorama birthday calendar, wish you were on there. March 16th is Michelle Lopez. Yay! AKA Country Yay. Signs. Happy birthday, Michelle. Greg Lemon from The Myth Show and Myth Minute on the 18th, and on the 19th, JT Shea of the Gigcast. It says, once again, he turns 40. What is this, like the fifth year in a row? JT, it's time to stop living in the past.
You know, I think once I made it the first time, I wouldn't want to turn 40 again. I'd figure it'd be 80.
He's all that much closer to 50 and denying it. If you want to be on the Technorama birthday calendar, go over to Technorama website, click on the wiki link at the top, and you will see it there. Birthday calendar. It's pretty obvious, pretty straightforward. Or you can just go to chuckchat.com/wiki. See you there. And like I said before, every week, Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern time, Google Plus. We're here. Have some fun. On this day in history for March 14, 2012, this is the 73rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 292 days remaining in 2012. It was on this date in 1794 that Eli Whitney is granted a patent for the cotton gin.
And on the same date in 1903, the Hay-Herring Treaty granting the U.S. the right to build the Panama Canal is ratified by the United States Senate. The Colombian Senate would later reject the treaty. Hey, wait a minute.
It was also March 14, 1910 that the Lakeview Gusher, the largest U.S. oil well gusher near Bakersfield, California, vented to atmosphere.
Orvin Hess and John Bumstead became the first in the world to successfully treat a patient, Ann Miller, using penicillin today in 1942.
I wonder what they were treating her for.
Don't know, but we fixed it with penicillin.
Broken leg.
48 years ago today, a jury in Dallas, Texas, finds Jack Ruby guilty of killing Lee Harvey Oswald, assumed assassin of John F. Kennedy.
And the Linux kernel version 1.0.0 is released today in 1994. I guess I should probably upgrade that by now.
Astronaut Norman Thagard becomes the first American astronaut to ride to space on board a Russian launch vehicle on this date in 1995. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli, born on this date in 1835.
And German scientist and Nobel laureate Paul Ehrlich was born today in 1854.
Also born today in 1863, American railroad engineer Casey Jones.
And a name everyone recognizes, Mr. E equals MC squared, Albert Einstein was born today in 1879.
Polish mathematician Wacław Sierpiński was born 130 years ago today.
And aircraft designer for the Douglas Aircraft Company, Ed Heinemann, was born today in 1908.
American astronaut and CEO Frank Borman turns 83.
And finally, American astronaut Eugene Cernan celebrates his 78th birthday today.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for March 14th, 2012.
Good news, anyone?
First up in the news, we have a story about a woman who finds her husband's other wife on Facebook. This is straight from USA Today. Saw this, couldn't pass it up.
Of course not.
According to charging documents filed Thursday, Alan L. O'Neill married a woman in 2001, moved out in 2009, changed his name, and remarried without divorcing wife number one. The first wife noticed O'Neill had moved on to another woman when Facebook suggested the friendship connection to wife number two under the People You May Know feature. Wife number one went to wife number two's page and saw a picture of her husband, of her with her husband, with a wedding cake.
Oopsie.
Wife number one then called the defendant's mother. No, 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 people. Look.
Oh, look, there's a phone number.
Do you like them or do you block them? What do you do in that situation?
I don't know. It's kind of like a Mexican standoff. You got like the husband and the current wife and the old wife. And no, you've always read those stories where some guy died or something. He got caught with two families somewhere, you know, and I'm like, and they had neither one knew of the other. My first thought is, you know, I love my wife, but why would you want to get married twice?
Well, if he left on, according to the article, it sounds like he just never filed for divorce on wife number one.
No, I'm just talking about in general. You know, when you hear about those kind of stories, it's like, why? You know,
I don't know.
Wasn't the first, you know, wasn't the first marriage a lot of work? Why would you want two at the same time?
I think he just forgot or he didn't know.
Oh, I just skipped over that to-do item on my list.
But it's an interesting article about, and you hear more and more about this, is Facebook is starting to help law enforcement. They're tracking down vehicles. They're tracking down criminals because they're doing stupid things and posting things to Facebook. They've got all the evidence they want.
Hey, the cops can just sit back with the donuts and just watch the news feed.
You guys want to give me some more donuts and coffee?
They just sit there and watch their news feed on Facebook.
Well, I think by this time everybody's heard of the Costa Concordia, you know, cruise line disaster that happened. The ship ran aground, tipped over, and sank, but it's still sitting there. Well, according to this article on Gizmodo, owners of the capsized Italian cruise ship want to save it with something they saw in Mythbusters, and it doesn't include explosives. I thought was interesting.
I was gonna say they're gonna blow it up.
That's what my first thought was. Gotta read the article.
Remember seeing that old video with the beached whale and the dynamite?
That went off well. It's been a month since the fatal sinking of the Costa Concordia off the coast of Italy, and now that the 500,000 gallons of onboard fuel are being safely siphoned off, the ship's owner must decide: raise it from the seabed with hundreds of thousands of ping pong balls, or call in the Jawas and have it dismantled for scrap.
I'm being jawless.
You think? Yeah. No, they did this. They pumped in ping pong balls.
I know they did this, but I wonder on this scale. Oh my God,
that's a lot of ping pong balls.
Yeah,
that's a lot of ping pong balls.
I don't know if it, I wonder if that would work on this kind of scale because that's a lot of. The MythBusters boat was a small little dinghy type boat.
The MythTanic, yeah.
This is like the Titanic. It's bigger than the Titanic, actually.
The article goes on to say an exotic solution would involve pumping air-filled polystyrene balls into Costa Concordia to make it float to the surface, an idea tried in the past in Iceland and Kuwait. A similar concept using ping pong balls was actually first mentioned in a 1949 Donald Duck comic. Well, I'm glad we're basing this on scientific thing. And science fiction legend Arthur C. Clarke invoked a similar idea in the Ghost from the Grand Banks, suggesting billions of glass bubbles could raise the Titanic.
Well, Tim Elliott asked, do you think, could they just put a large balloon in it? And I remember watching that, remember that old movie called Raise the Titanic?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of their thoughts was, can we just put a balloon in it? And they were trying to bring it up to the surface.
You could, but a balloon, it couldn't be any bigger than, say, one of the rooms or
cabins
or staterooms.
Yeah.
And the ping pong balls you could evenly distribute, so they'd lift nice and evenly on all sides.
But that just seems like you'd have to have a ton of them. Well, you know what? In, was it like 2 weeks? I'm taking Harrison to go to Raleigh for the MythBusters Live. I'll just ask them when they do the Q&A.
Yeah, how many ping pong balls would it take to lift the Costa Concordia? They'd look at you and say, get out.
Hey, can y'all get on that now?
Make sure you record that answer for the show, will you?
Yeah, right. But we are going, so I'm looking forward to it. The videos I saw look pretty interesting.
Raleigh's what, 3 hours away from you?
Yeah, about
that. I think that's what it was when I drove it that one time.
Mm-hmm, that's about right.
Okay.
So yeah, we're going to go and watch the show and the whole thing, so looking forward to it.
Cool!
Hey, if anybody's in Raleigh and wants to get together at night, you know...
tweet up.
It's on Saturday the 24th, so that 23rd, 24th.
The third story we have in the news section, yes, we actually have some news. The USS Enterprise is going on its final voyage.
But it's not the Enterprise you think.
Well, no, it's the current Enterprise. The USS Enterprise, the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. The nuclear vessels, that one. The AP, the Associated Press, is reporting that the world's first nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Enterprise, is to be retired after 50 years of active service, the longest of any warship in the U.S. naval history. Well, that's honorable, till you continue to read on. It starts to sound like an old veteran here. Its final deployment will take it to the Middle East and last for 7 months. The big ship has become notoriously difficult to keep in repair. Ah, my hip! As an old ship and the only one in its class, breakdowns have become frequent and replacement parts often have to be custom made. Ah, my knee!
I need a walker!
Despite its place in Navy history and popular culture, Enterprise will meet its end at the scrapyard rather than being preserved as a museum. This is expected to happen in 2015 after the nuclear fuel has been removed.
But I can't help when I got to the end of that article. Oh, that's kind of sad. And I started thinking, you know, William Shatner and George Takei and everybody tries to sneak on it and take it on one more mission and take it and steal it from the shipyards.
We need those particles.
We're going to get Spock over to the Mediterranean to put his Katra back in.
Or the guys from Leverage can say, we're going to steal ourselves an aircraft carrier.
How do we do that? Well, I know where one is conveniently.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to the scrapyard, though.
Mm.
But, you know, those museums ain't cheap to keep up.
No.
I was on the USS Midway in San Diego, and that's a lot of work. That was a steam vessel.
Steam, wow. Well, yeah. We go on with the scouts every other year. Our pack goes down to Charleston to go see the USS Yorktown. And it's showing some wear and tear a little bit, but it's still in decent shape. I think it's actually cemented to the ground. So to remove it, I think, would be a huge undertaking.
So nobody steals it.
Be like David Copperfield, make it disappear.
Hacks and Stray Stories. Our story in the Hacks and Strange Story is about the meth king who spent his drug money on comic books.
And no, it's not Walter White.
If you deal drugs, you make plenty of money. But fast cars, women, and a Playboy lifestyle can become unsatisfying, which is perhaps why Aaron Castro, the leader of a 41-person methamphetamine ring, turned to comic books, using his earnings to buy 18,753 of the things.
Wow.
Based in Commerce City, Colorado, Castro was responsible for bringing, quote, massive quantities of the drug into Colorado from Phoenix, unquote. And along the way, he made a handsome profit, reports the LA Times. It seems, though, that an unquenchable thirst for comic books is rather expensive. Yeah, I'm sure we can all appreciate that.
Yeah, that and cigars and fine scotch.
With a name like Castro, you should have cigars. Court papers explain that Castro began to struggle with money because he would spend his drug money on comic books.
Hey, that's like reverse. That's
and here's me thinking meth is addictive.
I mean, you should go to more comic book conventions.
Hilariously combining work with pleasure, Castro is also reported to have stowed meth in some of the books. He eventually pleaded guilty to multiple felony charges and has been sentenced to 45 years in prison, where there are no comic books.
Oh, by the way, this is a spoiler for the next season of Breaking Bad. Oopsie, sorry.
We get our storylines from Technorama.
Well, that's kind of sad. That's where I draw the line. He was storing his meth in the books.
Well, it's in a nice wrapper.
No, you don't treat comic books that way.
Totally missing the point.
Here. Wait, what's in my Thor number 52? Oops, give me that back.
You've soiled Superman number one.
Hey, this is Neil Grayson. I play Douglas Fargo on Eureka, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig.
Remember when you had to burn wood or some fossil fuel to cook your food? Remember when you had one phone in your house and it was attached to the wall? Remember when computers filled a room the size of your garage? Technorama remembers.
Looking back on the years in Remember When, we have lots of funny stories, and this one is among them. Back in 1939, a robot dog was created and unfortunately killed while chasing a car. Boy, sometimes you stumble across a piece of history that's too good not to follow up on. Sparkle, the robot dog, is one such piece of history. Prepared for the World's Fair in 1939, he got out of his pen, chased a car, and was killed. No fooling. Androids may dream of electronic sheep, but people have dreamed for decades of electronic dogs. Robots, a threatening concept, became much less frightening when they put him in the form of man's best friend. This relationship turned out quite satisfying for people, as well it might, since people engineered it that way. The dog didn't fare so well. One of the most tragic cases was Sparkle, the electronic dog. Sparkle was a litter of three Sparkles, inspired by Philly Dog, a French robot exhibited in the 1929 International Radio Exhibition in Paris. Philly Dog would follow a specific light obediently, and when it got too close to the glow, would stop and begin to bark. A decade later, the Sparkles were meant to upstage the French. All the Sparkles were modeled on Scottish Terriers and meant to be shown off with their master, a smoking robot. Well, that's nice. At the 1939 World Fair. I think we did an article on that smoking robot.
His name was Bender.
Come here, pooch. They were supposed to follow any light and chase after visitors playfully. The last Sparkle was lost in 1957. The fate of the one remains a mystery. Ooh, can you imagine how much that's worth if found?
I'd like to see it.
But the first to perish died tragically before the fair even began, when a careless worker left the door to its storage area open. According to sources at the time, a car passed the door. Immediately, the dog saw its headlights. It went off. Apparently, it rushed headlong toward it and was run over, despite the efforts of the driver to avoid it.
Hey, it was just like a real dog. By the way, looking at the diagram, it's pretty cool. Let's see the sit-down motor, worm gear, and shaft for a sitting mechanism. Tail wagger.
Cable turns head when dog sits down. Sprocket to drive walking mechanism, the tail wagger.
Crank action lift dog's leg up and forward.
Can you imagine the car driver? Screech! Oh, man! What the?
I got a flat tire now. What's up with that?
Next up, we have another story about Oh, you know about the Spruce Goose, right? Howard Hughes' big monster plane. Oh, there's one bigger. The Kellanin K-7 was the king of the propeller planes. When the Spruce Goose was just a twinkle in Howard Hughes' eyes, Russia was quietly constructing the largest propeller plane to ever leave the ground. The Kellanin K-7 was designed by the Russian army in the early 1930s as an experimental heavy bomber aircraft that could also be used to transport civilians. Since jet engine technology had yet to be invented, the K-7 relied on conventional prop engines, and lots of them. It employed 20 engines in total, 6 propellers along the leading edge of each wing, another pair on the trailing, and some extras just sprinkled around for good measure. The K-7's unusual twin-boom configuration and underwing pods, which housed the landing gear and machine gun turrets, which are always helpful for transporting civilians, actually seated up to 120 passengers inside the plane's 7-foot-tall, 173-foot-wide wings, in addition to a crew of 11. This thing is a monster!
Look at the cockpit. I mean, it looks like there's like 2 or 3 levels in there where people could sit.
Looks like the front end of an office building.
No, you know what it reminds me of is in Captain America, the ship, you know, the plane they were on.
This is kind of what those things were modeled after. That was the 30s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like shaped like just one big huge wing.
There's a shot of it from above. It looks like one big huge wing with 2 booms coming out of it and a bunch of engines on it. This is a monster.
Wait a minute, there's a guy on top. I wonder if that's Indiana Jones.
Dun, 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 dun. Designed by Konstantin Kalinin and built between 1931 and 1933, the K-7 was one of a kind. During its first test flight, the superplane exhibited serious in-flight instability. The plane's frame also contributed to instability due to the resonance with the frequency of the engines. The K-7 did complete 7 test flights, proving the plane's ability to reach 13,000-foot operational ceiling at 140 miles an hour top speed. A crash in 1933, which killed 15 people in total and destroyed the aircraft, was widely speculated to be the result of sabotage and political intrigue. That marked the end of the K-7's development and preceded the end of Kalinin by 5 years. In 1938, he was executed as an enemy of the state during Stalinist purges.
You make crappy plane, we shoot you.
Yeah, could you imagine being the pilot and taking this out for a test run?
It must have taken a week to get that thing off the ground.
He had to be scared crapless, or cojones of steel.
Speaking of steel, here's a steel from 1935. The world's first e-reader. Okay, it's a concept for an e-reader. Back in 1935, the world's first parking meters appeared. T.E. Lawrence dies in a motorcycle accident. The Nation of Libya is formed. And in other news, Everyday Science and Mechanics magazine published their vision of the future of reading. Hello. What would that be? The Kindle Grandpa.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Smithsonian's Paleo Future blog brings us this wonderful little concept, which, unlike the latest iPad, would be one of the largest items of furniture in your house. It included microfilm, light bulbs, focusing knobs, and a chair. Wow, wish my iPad came with a chair.
Yeah, right. Look, I like the buttons. Buttons turn leaf.
Swing screen to proper angle.
I need that for my iPad.
Miniature film carries photographs of book pages.
Yeah, baby.
But hey, that gives a whole new meaning to retina display, doesn't it?
Yeah, ground glass. Wow.
Man, this was just a good week for history things. We also have some of the very first robots. You know what they made early robots out of?
Wood.
Old alarm clocks and apparently some kitchen kettles.
Alarm clocks?
Elmer and Elsie, 2 electronic tortoises. These things look more like, your pots and pans running around the kitchen.
Looks like those robots that they have in the Robot Wars.
Less than that. These just were a shell.
A shell.
2 electronic torsos built in the late 1940s by neurobiologist Gray Walter were the first robots in history programmed to think the way biological brains do. What did they do with their freedom? What everyone has tried to do. Stay alive. Walter was interested in brains. He studied electroencephalographs and collaborated with Pavlov's students and brain body maps. I got caught up on Pavlov's students and just started thinking about the dog drooling on the Your robot is drooling all over. Yeah, every time the bell rings, I don't know why it does that.
Hey, by the way, the baby in the picture with the baby and the gentleman looking over. Just
kill all humans.
He looks like Walt Disney just made it. He's got this new invention for his kid.
You got to watch the video. It's actually pretty entertaining because
it's the mechanical ladybug.
The shell of this actually attaches to sensors inside, so when it gets close to something and hits it, it knows to turn and move away. And I was just watching something on Science Channel. They do Prophets of Science Fiction. They had George Lucas talking about like R2-D2 helping navigate Luke Skywalker and whatnot, and they've got robots that will now start to do some of this. And it goes back to this stuff. I mean, it all comes around again. It's kind of cool.
Well, what you just described sound like a Roomba.
Watch the video. It looks like a Roomba because it goes around, knocks into stuff, changes direction, and then it even goes into a little recharging shelter at the end. Hey, like, well, dude. See,
the difference between this man's robot and the Roomba is his doesn't suck.
You earned that one, buddy.
Okay. Hey, do you have a Roomba? If so, let us know.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Our final story in the Remember When segment covers rockets to deliver the mail. That sounds like a bad idea all over the place.
Horses weren't good enough.
In 1935, a wealthy enterprising stamp collector, dealer, 32-year-old Frido W. Kessler, came up with what seemed like a brilliant idea. He would commission a mail-carrying rocket plane filled with a bag of mail bearing special stamps of his own design and creation. He could then sell these unique collectibles for a premium. Well, kind of like Starbucks coffee. This scheme had already worked in Europe, and he saw no reason why it couldn't work here.
Yeah.
And there's a series of images. Making a long story short, it didn't work. His initial launch was on a very cold day, and the cold interfered. The thing didn't fire. Then the, I don't know what they called them, but basically the docking clamps didn't let go. So this thing went, and just sat there.
And then it blew up and burned up the mail it had contained in it.
Finally. Well, there was a sample flight. He couldn't get the actual mail until, people let him. Finally, he gets this thing off the launch pad and it goes about 6 feet and falls on its face. It just really wasn't a good idea. So let me ask you this. You launch this rocket plane.
Okay.
Let's say it can fly 200 miles, right? And I'm sending something from here to, say, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
How does it land? Where does it land?
Oh, well, we didn't think that far ahead.
It lands in some open field.
Yeah, just go pick it up.
And let's see, this was in 1935. So what do you think the success rate is when... Hitler starts launching V2s and buzz bombs and things. Is that the Axis attacking us, or is it the mail? I don't know.
Yeah, and riddle yourself this.
I'm not gonna go find out.
Yeah, this is like a precursor to the modern drones.
Kind of, but these aren't smart or piloted in any way.
Ah, neither are drones.
Drones are piloted from the ground.
Okay, fine.
And they don't carry the mail.
You and your stupid logic.
We like stupid logic. That's what Technorama's all about.
Oh, hey, by the way, I like the guys are all dressed up. The guys in the white outfit in that first picture is like a hazmat suit or heat resistant suit. It's like he's poking it with a stick, waiting for it to go off.
Well, I guess his daughter was going to christen the first rocket with a cup of snow. But the snow didn't come out of the cup because it was so cold. So apparently some little boy had to come and beat the cup with a stick to get the snow to come out. It was not a successful operation in any stretch of the imagination.
It froze up. Just take this broomstick and stick it a little bit and it'll fix it up.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
In the Media Corner, we have an article from the Muppets. Actually, a letter from Dr. Bunsen Honeydew to the Mars Rover team.
A letter.
That's right.
Hello, everybody.
You want me to try that?
Dr. Bunsen Honeydew here. No, go ahead.
The Jim Henson Company
to Mars Rover Mission Team from Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and Beaker, Muppet Labs.
Meep, meep.
R.E., congratulations! Dear colleagues, it is with mixed emotions that the Muppet Labs offers you the hearty congratulations on the recent success of your Mars rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. While we realize your remarkable accomplishment is really nifty thing for the entire scientific community, we at Muppet Labs Exploration Team, or MULMIT, wanted to get there first. We were so close, a mere 3 weeks, give or take a 20-year margin of error, from launching our own Mars Explorers. Nonetheless, in the spirit of scientific camaraderie, and with a promise that we'll beat you next time, Muppet Labs sends you and your team an enthusiastic, "Well done, bucko!" Scientifically yours, signed Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, Ph.D., Esquire. P.S. If you continue to have difficulties with the Spirit Rover, my assistant Beaker is happy to offer free roadside assistance on Mars utilizing our new, thoroughly untested, interplanetary coiled powered catapult, or as we at MULMIT like to call it, the Spring Fling.
Spring Fling.
P.P.S. Signed, Beaker.
Nice.
And if you thought it was cool being in a Star Wars movie, think again. Jake Lloyd.
Okay, I'm thinking again.
The kid who played young Anakin Skywalker in Phantom Menace.
Oh, yeah.
Said that movie made his life a living hell. Of course, he's now grown up and through high school. Because that was released, he was what, probably 8-9 years old when that came out in 99?
Early 20s.
Yeah, he's got to be in his early 20s. He's done.
He's done. It's over now.
He said that movie made his life a living hell, causing him to burn all his Star Wars toys and ultimately step away from the world of acting.
Oh, poor guy.
Other children were really mean to me. They would make the sound of a lightsaber every time they saw me.
What?
Yeah. It was
hey,
mad.
Is this part of his therapy? Got to face his fear.
My entire school life was a living hell, and I had to do up to 60 interviews a day. When you get something like that, there's not a lot of expectations for to meet the standards of the public, and I don't think George Lucas did that. Lloyd says he's vowed to stay away from acting, thank God, and he's done that, avoiding acting, except for a few voiceover roles for Star Wars-related video games.
Aha! Look at there. He hasn't stayed away even from Star Wars.
Voice acting.
Well, I mean, people are cruel, and they, I mean, I'm sure a bunch of kids were really beating him up over it. I get that. Because you've seen actors all the time go, well, they're really mad at me because I cheated on so-and-so, but that wasn't a movie.
Wouldn't you, like, take your kid to a different school or a private school or something? Maybe it wasn't a private school.
You should be able to afford it after being in a movie, though.
I would have stunned him. Here, let me show you my pod racer.
Yeah, I used to go search for him in, like, on Google Images or something. He kind of has that same shape to his face.
Yeah, most kids do resemble themselves when they were younger and older.
Because it is himself, that's of course.
Profound, Craig. Speaking of profound, turns out that something you didn't know about Dick Clark. Apparently he owns a one-bedroom Flintstones-inspired home in Malibu. And the LA Times reports that he's selling it for $3.5 million, though the asking price doesn't really reflect the value of the home so much as his 23-acre plot of land it sits on. There are some astounding images of the inside of this thing, and I would not want to be the architect or the contractor paid to build this thing, but my goodness, it's got a magnificent view all around.
It is. I like it. The house itself.
Yeah, I'll ask Donna if that's where we want to move.
Look, I found a new house. Check it out.
You look at, like, the kitchen, okay? And it's the Flintstones-type kitchen. None of the drawers are square or straight. I mean, they got to be on some kind of glides, right, when your drawer goes in and out. But the front end of these things is just so chaotic. And I don't know how he did this, but if I were building this house, I definitely would have had a shower with a woolly mammoth trunk sticking out of the wall.
just a flexible shower head, but it's shaped like, it looks like a...
Absolutely.
If you've gone this far.
3.5 million, come on. You look, can't even afford the mammoth trunk.
Yeah, what's up with this tub? It looks like it's got regular faucets on it. It needs like a, like you said, a trunk.
Dick, you disappointed me.
I think it's a cool house. I'd love to at least stay in it, you know, or check it, at least walk, take a tour in it.
Saber-tooth tiger rug on the floor.
Hey, look under the sink. It's a real pig.
I'm glad they switched to the eco-friendly soap.
Hey, I wonder how long these pictures are taking. Look, if you look at the living room and look at the TV, one, it's a CRT tube. Two, it's got rabbit ears right above it on the little mantle.
Dude, hello, Stone Age family?
I thought you're gonna start singing.
You walked into that. You walked into that. You had it hanging out over home plate. How could I not hit that?
Here, Chuck, here's a platter for you. Look what I got on here.
So before we go, we wanted to remind everybody that we will be attending DragonCon 2012 again, Labor Day weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. We want to see you there. I am sending out, this is your personal invite. Let me know by the end of March, March 31st, 2012, if you would like to join us in the parade dressed as Men in Black. It's a pretty simple costume. Yeah. Black suit, white shirt, black tie. Now, have you seen the trailers that are coming out for the new movie?
Yeah. What are you talking? I'm a trailer junkie, man. Yes.
You trailer trash.
Not my words.
Not coming out right tonight.
No, but me and Harrison likes the last two Men in Black movies, so I'm kind of working him up to this. We've been watching all the at least a couple of big trailers that they had.
We're looking to see if anybody else is interested. So the first trailer that I saw anyway was the one where Will Smith just got like spit out of that giant fish, whatever it was.
Yeah, right.
And I'm thinking, what is wrong with his suit, and what do I have to do to my suit to make it look like that? And then I realize he got slimed. I'm like, I'm not doing that to my suit. Not from Joseph A. Banks for a couple $100.
Yeah, right.
Looks like a good movie. Looks like a good movie.
I hope it is.
That brings us to the end of Technorama. We appreciate you giving us your support. Thanks for listening. There are many ways to show your love. If you want to get in touch with us, 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-2428. No, 206-222-2428. I'll get that right one of these days. You can email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. Follow us, friend us. You know, all that stuff is on the website over at chuckchat.com/technorama. Want to also give a quick shout out to all the people who've been very, very helpful with the monthly micropayments. $2 a month. You can click on the PayPal thing on the website. Very helpful. And helps offset the costs of this show. There aren't many costs in this. We don't make a rich living, but we do have hosting and whatnot to keep up with.
Yeah. And it does help. It helps. You're an enabler for our podcasting habit.
Habit. It's going to be on comic books next.
Yeah. Yeah, I need my fix, man.
Also, special thanks to Mad Marv for providing all the great blog content during the week. Everyone who sent us links during this week, thank you very much. Most helpful. We try to get as many of those in as we can. And special thanks to those who showed up in the Google Plus Hangout. Again, Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern Time. Want to see you there. It's a good time. And thank you, loyal listener, for downloading and listening, as always.
Hey, by the way, you sound like Superman when you say that.
Loyal listener.
Fellows and girls, go out and get your Technorama today.
Good citizen.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media at farpointmedia.com. Great podcasts over there. Go there and check them out. Until next time, tell everyone you know about Technorama today. And give me a binary high five.
101.
Just don't choke on that hazard in your breakfast cereal.